Today's episode of Vital Voices is brought to you by Oak Tree Medical Center.
Welcome to Vital Voices, the podcast that amplifies the people and conversations shaping the future of health and wellness in our communities. I'm your host, Alexis Burrows, and today we're diving into a topic that hits close to home for many families, the link between screen time and obesity in children. We're raising a generation surrounded by screens, tablets, phones, video games, YouTube, and every other form of social media. And while technology has its benefits, the effects of too much screen time on our children's physical health are becoming harder to ignore. Rising childhood obesity rates, sedentary lifestyles, and disordered eating patterns are just some of the growing concerns. Joining us today is pediatrician Dr. Valencia Johnson, who's here to help us make sense of it all, from breaking down the science to sharing practical strategies with parents and caregivers. Dr. Johnson brings both medical insight and compassionate advice. So whether you're a parent, teacher, or simply someone who cares about the next generation, this conversation is for you. Stay with us. Vital Voices starts now. So, Dr. Johnson, welcome to Vital Voices.
Well, thank you for having me.
So for those who may not know you, can you briefly tell us about your background in pediatrics and your current work?
Okay, I would have started my pediatric journey at the Princess Margaret Hospital. Mm-hmm. After I completed internship, so I would have done a stint in pediatrics without being a resident, and then I did the residency and I would become a pediatrician there. I worked in the Department of Public Health for about 3.5 years as a pediatrician before transitioning into private practice on its own.
Perfect. And you are co-founder at Healthy Kids, correct?
I am, yes. Correct.
And then you also do... You're a consultant pediatrician at Oak Tree?
Yes.
Okay. Awesome. So I know when we were preparing for our conversation, you mentioned that you've done quite a bit of conversation in and around the area of childhood obesity. And I guess now kind of looking at how screen time connects with it. You know, what has kind of drawn your interest or your passion or your concern in that area to kind of talk about that topic?
So pediatric nutrition is actually my passion point for pediatrics within the field of pediatrics. And of course, in the Bahamas, a lot of our malnutrition is overnutrition, even though we do see some undernutrition. And sometimes you can actually have overnutrition. It's bad nutrition and the kids are actually undernourished, right, even though they are overweight or obese. So we're in pediatrics, the study itself, is to see children develop normally and make sure that their nutrition is adequate throughout their group. You know, the emphasis is on trying to get to pull back in the overnutrition or the undernutrition to get them into the stream of normal nutrition and growing properly throughout. And that's a study or field that excites me.
Okay. I know you mentioned you had experiences throughout the hospital, the Department of Public Health, and now in your own practice. Is there a specific case or trend that kind of sparked the interest in going into, or I guess focusing on the nutritional element of pediatrics?
Well, initially I thought that I was going down the pathway of pediatric endocrinology, which focuses on basic hormones, diabetes, and then it actually has a segue into obesity medicine. And then just as I started to learn a little bit more about nutrition specifically in pediatrics, I think I found my passion drifting from endocrinology to in nutrition. There's no specific subspecialty for nutrition. You know, you can get an MPH or something like that. But I just find that area of pediatrics most exciting.
Great. So let's try to understand the problem in terms of childhood obesity and then where screen time starts to fit into that conversation. So what are some current statistics or trends when it comes to childhood obesity? And that can be both locally as well as globally. What are we seeing in the numbers?
So I would say overall, especially on this side of the world, we're seeing the numbers of pediatric obesity, overweight and obesity increase. PAHO and WHO have done a study here, and it showed that we have about a 45% rate of childhood overweight and obesity in the Bahamas. That gives us a gold medal in the Caribbean. We are first, and I think we are sixth in the world of childhood overweight and obesity.
That's intense. That's not a gold medal that you want.
No, it's not. You know, I would much rather say we are first in swimming or track and field.
Right.
But yes, currently that's where we are.
Mm-hmm. You know, I always tell people, you know, I consider myself and people who are kind of in my age bracket as like this middle child of generations, right? So I have the experience of growing up and spending summers in Long Island where there was still no power. There wasn't phones in the home. So like when I spent summers there, like 9, 10 years old, I would have to ride my bike up to the BTC station to call home, right? And then I was also in the first 7th grade class in SAC who had computer as a standard class from 7th grade. Mm-hmm. So, you know, our generation of this late 30s, early 40s, we've kind of seen the gap bridged from almost no technology to this insanity of technology that we now see our kids involved in. And so a part of that has been this increase in the different types of screens, the reliance on screen time to help settle kids, all of these different types of things. So from your perspective, given, you know, your interest and what you've been looking at, how significant is the role of screen time in contributing to obesity in children? And you can compare that to other factors like diet and genetics. I know sometimes we look at it like, well, you know, my family's big boned, or well, we just eat a healthy diet, mm-hmm, right? Mm-hmm. But where does screen time fit in this conversation?
Well, I agree with you. I am maybe a little bit further on the top of that age bracket. So I would have been spending my summers in Nassau or in Florida. Mm-hmm. But the majority of the days we were outside.
Yep.
We were always on an adventure, climbing trees, scaling walls, wherever we weren't supposed to be. Mm-hmm. We found ourselves on, you know, just my cousins and I, we would be on long treks. I think we even tried to walk to Cabbage Beach one time, but we were always outside, mm-hmm, sitting up in the tree, having tea parties and getting stuck sometimes.
Yep.
We couldn't get down, so you were up there for hours at the beach. But we spent extensive periods of time
outside.
And now, gone are the days where children even play with their neighbors, where they're outside playing with their neighbors, you know, just having jacks, hopscotch. We used to play even Monopoly outside sometimes with the neighbors. If the mm-hmm power went out, we would find out what the neighbors were doing, playing dominoes or Monopoly outside. And we, I don't think our parents would have known that we were doing cardiac activity. We were doing strength training, mm-hmm, resistance training, climbing those trees, using your arms to pull yourself up in the tree, mm-hmm, you know. So a lot of that is would speak to the activity level,
right,
of children, and they are lacking that now. Yes, a lot of kids are in some kind of organized activity. If they are privileged to have extracurricular activities, mm-hmm, they may be doing soccer, swimming, dance, ballet, things,
right,
like that. But the general activity level overall, outside of scheduled activities, has decreased over the years.
Yeah.
So, of course, in combination with the increase in fast food availability, parents being busy, the safety concerns, mm-hmm, that parents might have, they don't want the children outside. Some parents aren't prepared to be outside with the children.
Right.
So, overall, I would say the rate of inactivity in kids is increasing, and that's what's probably having the most effect on the increase of obesity rates that, mm-hmm, we're seeing.
Yeah, because I mean, like, so for me, we didn't have a video game console in our house until I think I was in like 10th or 11th grade. So it's the same thing. A lot of the summers were, you know, riding your bike, especially when you're on Long Island, you ride your bike down to the beach and you spend a whole day, mm-hmm, out on the beach. You know, if uncles were in town, you might go out on the boat and go fishing, or, you know, they go fishing and you just swim around in the water, like things,
right,
like that.
Yeah.
And so it is a lot different. And I think, you know, like you said, there's a multitude of reasons why that is. You have concerns over safety. You have a lot of, like, even just the economic part of it. You have a lot of parents now that are in the space of needing to work 2 and 3 jobs. So they're not even necessarily present in that evening time to even accommodate being able to watch your kids outside when you add in the safety concerns. You have all these things that add up. But looking in terms of specifically that, the impact of sitting in front of that screen, whether, like I said, it's a tablet, a laptop, a phone, you know, what happens in a child's body as they spend extended hours in front of a screen?
Okay, so it differs based on the age range of the kids.
Mm-hmm.
We find that the younger kids, some of them who should not be on a screen, mm-hmm. are losing some of their, or having delayed communication skills, delayed social skills. Mm-hmm. The older children, some of them might be interrupting their sleep hygiene, so getting less sleep. They're on screens for hours in the evening, even beyond the time they're supposed to be asleep, that their parents are supposed to be asleep. They're still on a screen. So their sleep quality and quantity is being decreased. There too, in the older children, they're losing their social skills because they're not necessarily communicating with their family. Mm-hmm. They are playing video games. They are watching more shows on YouTube. And sometimes they are falling asleep with the video game or the show, just going from one show to the next. And it's playing the entire time they're sleeping. So the quality of sleep, of course, is being decreased. Hygiene. So sometimes these kids are on whatever screen, phone, tablet, video game, so long, they're forgetting to bathe, they're mm-hmm. forgetting to brush their teeth. And so their hygiene is being interrupted or disrupted. And then on top of that, the nonsensical eating whilst you're sitting there watching mm-hmm. the screen. Sometimes you're eating for hours on end mm-hmm. and not paying attention to what you're eating, how much you're eating. You could put a big bag of Doritos or a big bag of chips in front of a child and they're just consistently eating. So they are losing the cues that say that I'm full mm-hmm. and they just continue to eat.
Mindlessly.
Mm-hmm. So those are probably the primary things that are affected.
Mm-hmm. What about, like, I guess from a metabolic standpoint, so like a child's metabolism, what impact does extended screen time have on that?
Okay, so in the same manner that it would have affected adults over time, you will have a decreased metabolic rate because mm-hmm. they're not as active as they're supposed to be. Even sometimes you will find normal little children, if they are watching a show, they mm-hmm. tend to want to jump, mm-hmm. roll, climb on chairs. And in some instances, parents will say, sit still. Like, don't move. Mm-hmm. Stay in that corner. And it's actually counterproductive mm-hmm. to what we want them to do. So if they are watching a show and they're jumping up on them, that's fine. Leave them because they're still getting their activity level and we don't want them sitting there. Well, I think it's abnormal to see a toddler mm-hmm. or 3 or 4 year old sitting there staring at the TV and not moving at all. Yeah. So you can get a regression in metabolic rate.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's something you see in the content nowadays is a lot of talk about capacity. And I guess the capacity the parents have for even just the overstimulation of the kid bouncing around. And so you have a lot of parents who will just say, no, sit still and watch the TV. But you're right. If you think about it, you know, you want them to be getting that physical energy out because it keeps the metabolism rate higher, even if they are watching the screen. If they're correct. Jumping up and down, running around, at least you're still getting some of that physical activity yeah. in. Even if it's not so rigid or structured mm-hmm. as something as like a sport or mm-hmm. ballet or gymnastics, karate, something along those lines. You know, I think the thing that always becomes interesting here, because we tend to, I think we have a lot of us tend to do extremes, right? So we go from way too much to none at all. So the question I would have for you is, you know, is all screen time created equal? You know, are there some types that are more harmful than others? Because you have like passive watching, you have things where you're using a screen for like interactive learning, because, you know, we still want to make sure that we're being mindful of it's not just everything, right? You don't mm-hmm. throw the entire baby out with the bathwater. But what does that look like in terms of the difference between depending on what they're using the screen for?
So as with all things, there are positives to screen time. Mm-hmm. One of the bigger positives, especially for the smaller children, is something like FaceTime. Mm-hmm. So sometimes parents are not in the same home or not in the same country. Mm-hmm. You have other family members like older siblings that might be in college. And that FaceTime allows for you to bridge the gap between mm-hmm. family members. You can talk to daddy every evening, even if he doesn't live in the same home as mommy or vice versa.
Right.
And for the younger children, in some instances, that's the only screen time that we promote, the kids that are under 18 months. Mm. That's helpful for mm-hmm. them to be able to see their family members, so that they can keep that connection. Mm-hmm. And so too with the older children as well. And then you have a lot of educational programs that are on the screen. Mm-hmm. You know, gone are the days where you have the Encyclopedia Britannica. So there's no lineup of a shelf that's filled with the books. So, you know, kids have to do their research and they have to do their homework. Mm-hmm. And it's good to be able to learn how to research on the internet. It is a tool. So using AI, using the internet to do different parts of their homework. In some instances, the school mandates homework on a screen. So they have to be able to use it. And it's not going anywhere.
Right.
So they have to be well-versed. But at the same time, you want to make sure that it's not to the detriment of the other social skills or the cognitive skills. Yeah. They have to still use their brain in other ways and functions. So educational-wise, and I think sometimes in social aspect, it's not bad too. Sometimes kids can play video games with their friends who live in other areas and other countries. And once it's monitored, to ensure that they, you know, there's no bullying going on,
right?
That they're age appropriate games, they're age appropriate people in the conversation. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not like a 10-year-old playing with a 25-year-old who's using a lot of profanity,
right.
Drinking alcohol, talking about drugs, and those kinds of things. I think that still, you know, can bring good aspects to their social skills.
Yeah, you know. It's interesting because obviously COVID would have an interesting impact on this. Like I know for us, when COVID hit, my daughter, who's our older kid, she would have been three. She'd have been two going on three when we had the initial set of lockdowns. So there were a number of birthday celebrations that were done over Zoom, right? And then, you know, there was those restrictions where you couldn't be in the home of someone else who wasn't like living in the home with you. Mm-hmm. And so there was a lot of, you know, doing like WhatsApp video calls and things like that in order for her to be able to communicate like with her grandparents, with aunts and uncles, things like that.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I think sometimes you have to bear in mind even incidences like that, that kind of sometimes shift the culture of how we even approach things because, you know, you get into this idea of, you know, we could just video call Grammy. You don't necessarily have to go by Grammy's house.
Right.
And so you have this kind of becoming a part of this new normal culture that we're in where it might not have been the same way, even if you just go back 5 to 6 years, pre-COVID, you know? Mm-hmm. So it is interesting to consider those sorts of impacts as well. Because like you said, if that's something where, you know, obviously you have family members that live in different parts of the world and things like that. So that's a different element to it. So let's look at, you know, the real life impact, especially when you start to talk about looking at obesity in kids. You know, what are some of the long-term health risks that obese children face if this pattern of obesity isn't interrupted early?
Well, initially, obesity children, of course, would have a greater risk of being obese adults.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one of the bigger things. Diabetes, high blood pressure, hyperlipidemia. All of those things which can lead to stroke and heart attack, and then cancers. So we find an increased risk of all of these things occurring in children who are obese because it lends to obese adults.
Mm-hmm.
And by and large, the effects of what happens during childhood, we are seeing it earlier. So whereas you would have age onset diabetes in the 60s and 70s, now we're seeing that number coming all the way down into the 20s.
Yeah.
And in some instances, we are seeing preteens having adult onset or what we would previously have called adult onset diabetes. We're seeing that now in younger children.
Wow.
So it's not taking as long as it would have to develop those chronic illnesses.
Yeah. I mean, how much, because you mentioned this a little bit, but how much does the type of food that we consume go into, like we had Dr. Moss on last week and she was talking about a patient of hers who was having, you know, GERD from eating Takis and the kid was two years old, right? And you mentioned this, that some of it is not necessarily, it's not a calorie deficit issue. It's more of a, you know, a malnourishment. So the wrong type of nutrition going in. So how much does that play into it as well? Like the idea of what we consume? Because, you know, I'm not going to mention his name. There's a physician that I've done stuff with before. And he's always like, you know, we all want to have three meats on the plate on Sunday and four carbs and those sort of things. So how much does that play into it? Because like you said, sometimes it's that you're not necessarily under eating, but you're overeating things that don't have any nutritional value.
Right. So the nutrition density versus calorie density of food. Mm. So even up to yesterday, I had a 16-year-old who has 3 cans of Coke per day. So the recommendation for children, of course, it depends on age, is about 25 grams of sugar per day, which works out to be about 60 spoons of sugar.
Mm-hmm.
1 can of Coke has about 10 teaspoons of sugar. So if you're drinking 3 cans of Coke, that's more than your week's supply of sugar in one day. And I find oftentimes with Bahamians, you know, we tend to say, oh, I don't eat that much. And I say, okay, well, let's go over the drinks.
Mm-hmm.
Because even things as simple as fruit juice, a lot of sugar. If you turn it on and look at the back of the juice content for a regular orange juice, apple juice, things like Snapple, Switcher, mm-hmm. iced tea, before we even get to soda mm-hmm. and Vitamalt, which has like maybe 13 to 14 teaspoons of sugar, and consuming more than one of those in a day is just preposterous in terms of the amount of sugar calories that gets into the body. And all of that sugar is deposited. It's not mm-hmm. like you're going to utilize it. And these are the things that later on damage our blood vessels and lead on to strokes and heart attacks. So making sure one of our primary goals is to get children to have as close to zero sugar sweetened beverages every day. So a lot of water, they're allowed to have milk.
Mm-hmm.
But water should be the primary drink
mm-hmm.
that children consume. And then there's the ultra processed foods, like the chips and the cookies.
Right.
So the bags that crinkle usually have the most unhealthy foods. I mean, you know, in the easiest way to think about it.
Right.
So the more you have to do to get something to last long,
mm-hmm.
probably it's the less healthy it is.
Right.
So trying to get parents to put healthier snacks,
mm-hmm.
utilize fruits and vegetables as snacks, things like crackers and cheese, crackers and peanut butter, much healthier than chips, even though the chips are a go-to.
Right.
You can find them everywhere,
mm-hmm.
as well as processed cookies too, not as healthy. And so, yes, the child might be full, or you might have satisfied that craving right after school with a snack,
right.
or even fast food. Parents tend to stop more often than my parents would never stop after school
mm-hmm.
to get McDonald's or Burger King or KFC. And it's so easy. There's one almost on every corner. And to satisfy the children after school, you know, they're hungry, they're screaming, they're yelling.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of trying to be prepared and maybe carrying an extra snack
right.
When you go to do pickup,
mm-hmm.
Let me just stop to McDonald's so they just stop making noise.
Right.
And again, they're going to be hungry in maybe another 3 hours because mm-hmm. it fills you up temporarily.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of salt, a lot of sugar, because most instances, not many people get the water at the fast food places.
Because they charge you extra.
Correct. And, you know, sometimes you're led to believe that the juice is a healthier snack than the soda.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes juice can have just as much sugar right. as soda, so it's not necessarily a great option.
You'd be surprised.
Yeah. So in terms of the nutrition
mm-hmm.
overall of what the kids are taking in, it's different.
Yeah.
I
encourage people to be label Nazis, right? Like we our household, for a number of reasons, turned into label Nazis over the course of going through COVID. And you would be surprised at how much things have sugar and added this and processed that and all these different additives. Because I know the preservatives are a big part of the issue as well. And we started to talk about the impact those additives have on your entire health system, not even just the sugar part of it.
Right.
And then it's funny you mentioned, because we kind of learned this almost by happenstance, but, you know, we learned that it made sense to either have an extra snack at the ready at home
mm-hmm.
as soon as we got home, or to have it in the car for my daughter when we picked up from school, because most times lunch was like, you know, maybe 3 hours ago.
Mm-hmm.
Depending on if they do lunch earlier, if they have lunch between 11 and 11:30, by the time you're in the car and pick up, you know, it might be 3:30, you're talking about 4 hours since they last ate. Mm-hmm. And so you learn that just through, because every time you come in the car, oh, I'm hungry, I want a snack. Right. And so it would either be like we carry an apple with us, we carry, you know, a small bag of homemade popcorn, things like that, because we just realize, no, it don't make sense to not have something in the car. So and that's a very helpful hack for parents to think about, you know, if you know your kid is hungry every day after school, have something that is at least a little bit healthier. But yeah, we as a general rule have issues with sugar sweetened beverages, whether it's, you know, Starbucks or Dunkin' Donuts for the adults. God knows, you know, things like Tampico and all these other different things. It's like, because even if people would say, well, you know, I get the natural juices, but then it's like, you have your lenient diet. They get, you know, the, like you say, the vitamin water, the Tampico, all these different things that are just insane amounts of extra sugar. But that's insane to have a 16-year-old that has, is having three cans of Coke per day.
Oh, yeah. Help us. I mean, it's become the norm to see people, you walking around, you see people drinking a Coke first thing in the morning.
Oh, definitely.
I'm like, what are you doing?
Definitely. That's the thing. It used to freak me out, but you see it so often now that it almost becomes this thing like, it doesn't affect you the same way as it used to. Because I don't know, you drive down the road, like, oh, is this person? And maybe it's somebody like a construction worker or whatever, but it's still like, why are you drinking a Coca-Cola at 7 a.m. in the morning?
And they're like, Doc, I need to wake up, man. And I'm like, really?
There's better ways. All right. So, you know, are we seeing more and more cases of mindless eating? So, like you say, the chip bag is there and they're just going at it, going at it. And then how does that habit contribute to weight gain?
So, yes, we are seeing a lot more mindless eating, adults as well as children.
Mm-hmm.
And I think what we can do to counteract that is to have only healthy snacks or to try to get as many healthy snacks in the home as possible, to buy less chips and cookies and have them lay in there. But you will realize that the longer you sit still watching a show, like I say, it prevents your fullness cue from indicating, hey, I have enough in my tummy. So you're eating little bits over time and you can consume a lot more than you would normally do. Right. So in most instances, mindless eating is not consuming a lot more fruits and vegetables.
Right.
It is going to be those ultra processed foods or snacks. And of course, that means that your caloric intake is increasing and these aren't nutrient dense foods. So you're increasing your calories with bad calories as well as you're being inactive whilst you're eating them. And that, of course, lends to increase in overweight.
I hope you're enjoying this episode of Vital Voices. We're going to take a quick break for some words from our sponsors and we'll be right back.
Ladies, at Oak Tree Medical Center, your health is our priority. From early detection to advanced treatment options, our comprehensive breast care services are here to support you every step of the way. With locations at East Street South, Prince Charles Drive, and our state-of-the-art surgical suites and MRI, top of the hill Mackey Street, we're right where you need us. Because when it comes to your breast care, you deserve the best care. And remember, the Million Mammogram movement continues. Call us today at 322-1145 or visit oaktreemedicalcenter.com to learn more. Oak Tree Medical Center, caring, compassionate, complete.
Discover the ultimate in personalized healthcare with the Oak Tree Primary Plus program. Enjoy comprehensive primary care, annual physicals, lab and imaging discounts, mental health screenings, and more, all tailored to meet your health needs. With flexible payment options, exceptional care has never been more accessible. Join today and take control of your health journey. Call 816-4-OPP, that's 816-4677, or visit oaktreemedicalcenter.com. Oak Tree Primary Plus. Are you down with OPP? Gentlemen, it's time to take charge of your health with Oak Tree Medical Center. We provide comprehensive prostate care at affordable prices, from prostate-specific antigen tests to prostate ultrasounds to advanced prostate MRIs. We've got you covered. Need further evaluation or treatment? Oak Tree Surgical Suites offers biopsies and in-house surgery. Our team of experts is here for you every step of the way. Visit us at Oak Tree Medical Center on East Street South and Prince Charles Drive, or for surgical procedures, find us at Oak Tree Surgical Suites, top of the hill, Mackey Street. Call us today at 322-1145 or visit oaktreemedicalcenter.com. Oak Tree Medical Center, caring, compassionate, complete. Welcome back to Vital Voices. Let's continue our conversation.
Just going back to the earlier question, you know, I definitely know I had classmates who lunch was, you know, a Coke, a chocolate bar, and a hot patty. Or that would be like the break time snack, and then it would be like a soda with, you know, the chicken and fries and things like that. So it is interesting, you know. It also reminded me of a point you made about parents stopping for fast food. You know, I don't think we realized how much you have McDonald's money saved our health for this generation, because we definitely, you got McDonald's money, right? You're asking for McDonald's.
Right.
But it's interesting to see how much that might have protected our long term health from not just caving into the McDonald's or the Wendy's or whatever it was at the time after school. You know, from your clinical experiences, obviously as a pediatrician, you see a lot of kids, and by virtue of that, a lot of parents. Are parents generally aware of the connection between screen time and obesity or other, you know, childhood issues? And is this an under-discussed topic? Like, what is the awareness level, and how much is, like, even a conversation like this helpful in trying to bridge that education gap if there's one that exists?
I think parents think that excessive screen time is bad, mm-hmm. in general. I'm not sure that everyone connects it with obesity.
Right.
So they know that the children shouldn't be on the screen for excessive periods mm-hmm. of time. In a lot of instances, you would have parents who say the child is not allowed to be on the screen during the school week.
Right.
They're only allowed on the weekends. But I'm not sure how many of them will actually connect excessive screen time to obesity.
Yeah.
And so that's one of the things that we would talk about in our well visits.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when we give our anticipatory guidance at the end, we would encourage parents to minimize the screen time, monitor the screen time.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, it varies per age.
Right.
So we adopt the different guidelines for each age group and explain to the parents, you know, the effects of prolonged screen time mm-hmm. to the children in terms of their nutrition and health.
Yeah. It's interesting because I realize, you know, what it feels like sometimes, and this is just from my anecdotal experience, you know, it feels like what's happening a lot of times is kids are doing what, like, so what we may have done in college, right? So, like, I can remember as a college age kid, you know, spending nights, you have a big, like, video game session. So it's like you and a bunch of your college buddies, and you have, you know, like four or five pizza box stock. You have, you know, a couple of 2 liter bottles of soda, mm-hmm. chips, whatever. And you are up all night. Everybody's playing. You're going from game to game and you're just casually eating and eating. But I realize what we would have done maybe in a microcosm of our entire life, which is like this 2, 3, 4 year period where you may have done that every so often. What we're seeing now, and you can tell me if I'm wrong, is it that you're having a lot of kids that are doing that more, not necessarily 4 or 5 stacks of pizza, but you understand the idea. Mm-hmm. Like, is that a part of it? Because I realize when we say we binge watch, we binge play, we then binge eat, because, you know, you just it's just this natural thing that happens.
Yeah, I think that that's happening on a regular basis mm-hmm. more often. And parents sometimes use the screens as a babysitter. So basically, even if I buy you that pizza
mm-hmm.
and we put on the screen, you can go over there and be quiet for a number of hours. Mm-hmm. Or I don't
necessarily. You ain't gotta come talk to me.
You don't have to come talk to me. Go sit over there. Mommy has stuff to do.
Right.
And I'm gonna be over here doing it.
Mm-hmm.
Or we can't get home early enough.
Mm-hmm.
So we're gonna order the pizza, send it there. And there's nobody monitoring. Are you doing your homework? You might check in and ask them if they're doing their homework. Mm-hmm. But they might be on the screen a lot more than they would if they had more supervision and if we had, like, maybe timers.
Mm-hmm.
But yes, I think that it's happening more often than for prolonged periods of time.
You know, what I, going back to an earlier point too about the healthy snacks and like having things available, like at school pickup times, so I thought about this. You know, a lot of times people will complain about the cost of healthy food, so whether it be fruits and vegetables, things like that. And I would just put in a shameless plug. We have no affiliation, but like things like the farmers markets are ways that you can get, you know, healthy, even just healthier versions of your fruits and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
They don't necessarily have the same amount of like pesticides and things like that, but they're also better priced and they last longer. And so you have all these different things you look at as well, where it's like, you know, there are opportunities to get your fruits and your vegetables from a place like a farmers market and get more bang for your buck, and therefore, you know, kind of combat that idea of it's just so expensive
right.
to eat healthy. And I think that's helpful for people to know and understand as well, because sometimes you have to be a little bit more creative. Mm-hmm. It's not just you stop at a food store on the way home and it's just whatever is there, right? There are ways that if you kind of think ahead, be mindful, and plan ahead, there are opportunities to get healthier foods, healthier snacks involved in the overall, in the overall run. So, you know, we like to have, when we do these conversations, to start to give meaningful strategies and help to our audience. So particularly looking at parents and caregivers. So how much screen time would you say is considered healthy or safe as you go across the different age groups? So I know as you currently have a 2-year-old, I know you're not really supposed to have screen time before 2, but how does that change over the course of childhood into adolescence?
So I think the recommendation is, so 18 months and under, mm-hmm. no screen time, mm-hmm. but they do allow for FaceTime or video calls for family. Mm-hmm. And then between 18 months to about 2 years, about 30 minutes of screen time per day, but mm-hmm. we encourage it to be shared screen time. Mm. So these under 24 months, 3D is very important for your child to see and see persons in 3D, the voices in person, mm-hmm. and then things like, say, if you're doing Itsy Bitsy Spire, to actually mm-hmm. see that going on around the walls of Jericho, the wheels on the bus, actually seeing you do that. Mm-hmm. So if you're having, if you're in that 18-month to 2-year period, and you put on a video of the wheels on the bus, so mommy and daddy have to get up and do the wheels on the bus while they're playing it, and that makes it a little bit more safe. So it's shared screen time between mm-hmm. the parent and the child. Mm-hmm. And you're still encouraging the activity.
Right.
So we're doing the song together mm-hmm. and you can see mommy and daddy participating, and that makes it a little better.
Right.
And then that older age group, like 2 years to about 6, again, shared TV time or screen time is important, so that you're also showing your child that you're interested in what they're doing. Mm-hmm. You're monitoring what they're doing mm-hmm. and you're monitoring the time as well. Mm-hmm. And then as they get older into the ages where they might have homework, you say outside of that homework time, no more than 2 hours of any screen. That's TV, phone, video game, tablet. And we encourage parents to make sure that your children are off of a screen mm-hmm. at least 1 hour prior to bedtime.
Right.
So I usually say you can make that hour your bedtime routine. So bathe, brush your teeth, get in bed, grab a book. Mm-hmm. If they're smaller, you're reading to them. Mm-hmm. We can all read together. As they get older, everybody, you can have reading time. Maybe in the living room, everybody has their own book and you're reading. You know, the adolescents kind of want their own time and their own space. So they can go in their room and read if they want to. But this is a good time for us to read. It doesn't have to be schoolwork. I encourage it to actually be something that they're interested in as opposed to schoolwork, so that it helps them to want to read a little bit more. Mm-hmm. But trying to minimize just going on the screen right up until bedtime, because that actually interrupts your sleep.
Yeah. How important is it for parents to model moderation in screen time?
This is becoming a bigger issue. Mm-hmm. So now you would see that parents are on the screen sometimes more than the children. Mm-hmm. You're coming home from work and you're on the screen, you're on your phone, you're still tying up loose ends at work. Just like eating meals and modeling what you want them to eat mm-hmm. at dinner time is important. So the children see you eating your fruits and vegetables, they see you drinking your water. Mm-hmm. So is monitoring your own screen time. So coming up with a family media plan mm-hmm. is really, really good. Mm-hmm. And it says, or it'll state that, you know, yes, we do need media, or we can use media, mm-hmm. but let's try to minimize how much we use it. And let's come up with a plan that works for everybody. Mm-hmm. Understanding, of course, that there are parameters that the children might not 100% want to go along with. But if we come up with a team plan, it's more likely that we will all stick with it. And the children can say, okay, my mommy does come off of her screen. Because in some instances, parents are at dinner time, which we rarely have these days. But and the parent is still on the phone. You know, I've seen my mom doing that. And I'm like, who are you messaging? Like, why are you at dinner and you're still on your phone? Like, put it all the way over there so you don't use it. But we can't be telling our children, you know, we don't want you on a screen, or you're on your screen too long, and then we're here it is. The parent is still communicating or doing work or watching videos and doing the same thing. It's just a different tool or a different media device that they're using.
Yeah, this is the double-edged sword of the advancement of technology, because, you know, with our parents, when they came home from work, work was at work. There was no capacity for bringing work home. Right. There was no work phone. There was no work laptop. There was no access to any of that. So they walked out the door, whether it was 5 o'clock, 6 o'clock, 7 o'clock, work is at work.
Correct.
So there is that component of it where, you know, this feeling of you have to be always connected to the office and available, which a lot of people now have, because again, you know, we grew into adults as technology was really hitting this type of stride. Mm-hmm. So a lot of us, when we got into work, we knew what it was to have like WhatsApp communication with our bosses or email, all these things from the minute we stepped into the workforce. So it is a lot different now when you consider, you know, our generation versus our parents' generation.
Right.
But we also still do see it bleeding in, even if it's just from a social perspective, yep, with our parents and things like that. You know, I feel like your answer to that question in terms of the importance of modeling speaks to our next question, which is, you know, what are some practical ways that families can begin to reduce screen time without it feeling like punishment or withdrawal? So I imagine the modeling is a part of that. But what else helps in that way?
So like I said, a family media plan, mm-hmm, is good. So you can sit down and say, okay, you know, you might have to be a little bit more structured with the younger children, but with the older children, allow them to participate in the boundaries, mm-hmm, what we're going to do. So if we're going to say, okay, if we're sitting at the dining table, nobody is allowed to use any type of screen,
mm-hmm,
whilst we're eating dinner together. And mm-hmm, we actually want parents to re-engage in dinner time. It's important. And then cutting out the screens at a certain time.
Mm-hmm.
So making, if bedtime is 9:30, then the cutoff time is 8:30. Let's do some things together. So as opposed to whilst mommy is cooking, you could go on and be on the screen. The kids can actually participate in preparing the meal. So, you know, age appropriate assistance. Some might just be able to wash,
mm-hmm,
wash up the fruits and vegetables. Some kids might be able to cut up or chop up. But allow them to participate and you can talk about your day, mm-hmm, in that time. Encouraging parents to have some time where we say this is the time we're going to spend outside,
mm-hmm,
or we're going to do an inside activity. And of course, you know, it's not going to be every day. That's not practical given how busy some people are. But if we say Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays, we're going to play a card game. Mm-hmm. We're going to do a puzzle.
Mm-hmm.
You can have an ongoing puzzle on a table or a space and we work on it,
yeah,
for 30 minutes, setting a timer. Let's do this together.
Mm-hmm.
So setting parameters and making sure everybody is involved. When you allow kids to participate in making boundaries, they're more likely to want to keep it. And then they'll be like, mommy, you've been on your screen for more than 30 minutes. They will remind you. And then they'll say, you know, you'll find them engaging over time and saying, okay, my screen time is up.
Right.
Or I want to save my screen time for this.
Mm-hmm.
So they prioritize. And that's some of the skills that you need in adulthood. So
that's always funny to me because you find that kids really do crave discipline and structure and order, even though it will seem like they enjoy to high heavens being able to do, right, whatever they want, whenever they want. When you see them actually operate in a structured and a disciplined environment, you'd be amazed at how much they really do actually enjoy that, even though, yeah, it might seem otherwise. But I think even in terms of like going for a family walk, like, yeah, a 30-minute walk in the neighborhood, or, you know, you drive out to an area that's safe and you do a 20, 30-minute walk, things like that, mm-hmm, all kind of different ways that you can find to, you know, kind of replace screen time with another type of activity that'll be helpful. And like you said, it makes it feel less like punishment,
right,
less like withdrawal, but something that we get to now do this together as a family.
Right.
Which I imagine is also important and helpful because you get to really connect with each other, mm-hmm, as family members.
I hope you're enjoying this episode of Vital Voices. We're going to take a quick break for some words from our sponsors and we'll be right back.
Ladies, at Oak Tree Medical Center, your health is our priority. From early detection to advanced treatment options, our comprehensive breast care services are here to support you every step of the way. With locations at East Street South, Prince Charles Drive, and our state-of-the-art surgical suites and MRI, top of the hill Mackey Street, we're right where you need us. Because when it comes to your breast care, you deserve the best care. And remember, the Million Mammogram movement continues. Call us today at 322-1145 or visit oaktreemedicalcenter.com to learn more. Oak Tree Medical Center, caring, compassionate, complete.
Discover the ultimate in personalized healthcare with the Oaktree Primary Plus program. Enjoy comprehensive primary care, annual physicals, lab and imaging discounts, mental health screenings, and more, all tailored to meet your health needs. With flexible payment options, exceptional care has never been more accessible. Join today and take control of your health journey. Call 816-4-OPP, that's 816-4677, or visit oaktreemedicalcenter.com. Oaktree Primary Plus. Are you down with OPP? Gentlemen, it's time to take charge of your health with Oaktree Medical Center. We provide comprehensive prostate care at affordable prices, from prostate-specific antigen tests to prostate ultrasounds to advanced prostate MRIs. We've got you covered. Need further evaluation or treatment? Oaktree Surgical Suites offers biopsies and in-house surgery. Our team of experts is here for you every step of the way. Visit us at Oaktree Medical Center on East Street South and Prince Charles Drive, or for surgical procedures, find us at Oaktree Surgical Suites, top of the hill, Mackey Street. Call us today at 322-1145 or visit oaktreemedicalcenter.com. Oaktree Medical Center. Caring, compassionate, complete. Welcome back to Vital Voices. Let's continue our conversation.
We mentioned this at the top of our conversation, you know, for working parents, especially for those who may be working either shift work or maybe working in, multiple jobs out of, necessity or whatever the reason may be, managing the screen time can be particularly difficult. So what are some tips in that environment? Because, sometimes it's you're in the other room and you're using technology as a babysitter, but sometimes you're at your second job, or you're at that night shift at the hotel, or even at the hospital. You know, what are some tips for parents in those types of scenarios for being able to set similar boundaries for screen time and not just default to that being the babysitter?
So what we have, there are inbuilt tools into a lot of media devices now, mm-hmm. or apps where you can actually set timers,
right?
And at the end of the timer, the device will shut off.
Mm-hmm.
In some instances, on the tablet, it will indicate to the parent that the child is on the device.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes the tablets or some apps will ask the parent if it's okay for the child to access mm-hmm. the device at a certain time. Mm-hmm. So I've seen parents, or I've been talking to parents, and they're saying, oh, look, he's going on to YouTube. Okay, I'll allow it for 30 minutes.
Right.
And they can say yes, and then they can actually turn it off remotely.
Right.
And then not even, sometimes you have this problem with grandparents. So the parents have a set of rules, and then the grandparents are the babysitter. So we have to get everybody involved in the media plan or the plan for the child, because, the grandparents and the babysitters are a little bit more lax. So ensuring that they know what the rules are.
Right.
And the child knows that they know what the rules are. Mm-hmm. So they don't try to bend the rules when they know they can get over on the grandparents or the babysitter. So a team approach.
Mm-hmm. I have to keep my mouth closed on that one. I don't want any trouble. All right. So are there particular warning signs the parents or caregivers should be aware of that a child's screen time is getting out of control or becoming harmful to their health?
And as with all things in pediatrics, it's age dependent. So mm-hmm. you might find the toddlers or the smaller children having humongous tantrums
mm-hmm.
when you take the tablet away.
Mm-hmm.
And that speaks to the dopamine loop, but going on that tablet or something you want, you're getting a hit of dopamine the entire time you're on it.
Mm-hmm.
When you remove the tablet or the device, then it's a sharp decline
mm-hmm.
and they get grumpy and upset
mm-hmm.
and they display that. And of course, as they are learning how to show their emotions, most times the toddlers will throw a tantrum.
Mm-hmm.
We might be allowing them to use this tablet a little bit too long.
Right.
Like I said, with the older children, sometimes their hygiene needs aren't being met. So you're like, did you take a bath today? Did you even take a bath tonight? did you remember to do that? Did you remember to brush your teeth? They're yawning all day. They're tired in school. The teacher might indicate that they're sleeping in class. And it's because they're up all night.
Mm-hmm.
They're not wanting to talk. Sometimes you will see with adolescents, in general, some adolescents tend to recluse and want to go in their room and not talk, but you find it happening a little bit more. They're absolutely mm-hmm. not saying anything to you. They're just going in that room and closing the door.
Right.
So the communication skills are lagging. And then they're less active. So when you're noticing that your child is not as active as they like to be, they're not interested in some activities that they might have wanted to participate in before.
Mm-hmm.
I'll skip it today, you know, and that's happening on a regular basis. Then you want to be mindful of what's happening. Are you on a screen? Mm-hmm. Are you substituting your screen? So, you know, that downtime, unplugged downtime is important.
Mm-hmm.
But noticing those cues when your child is kind of moving away from wanting to do family things or wanting to do even things with their friends,
mm-hmm.
Those are cues where you say, okay, I think we're going over the top here.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. A lot of our conversation has centered around parents and caregivers. But, you know, when you start to take more of a macro view of it, so looking at, you know, community and I guess more so like the national approach to this, you know, what role do, whether it be school policies or governmental policies, community organizations, like what role does that play in helping to kind of navigate and manage this? And like, are there things where we need to maybe rethink some of the, even like you said, a lot of the schools now will tend to lean more completely into the digitized homework and things like that. So from that standpoint, looking at how community, government, the school system, how all of those things play a role, like what are some things that can be done across those areas to assist in helping parents navigate this?
So I think from the school level, the school definitely has the capability to minimize or maximize how much screen time homework they right. give the children. So if you say maybe only 2 or 3 days out of the week, we'll give you homework that involves using a screen,
mm-hmm.
you still have to write out as opposed to type out
mm-hmm.
your homework. Not all research that involves, like, make it like a scavenger hunt mm-hmm. as opposed to having to go on or being able to go on the internet to find the answers. Go and ask your grandparents this mm-hmm. or go and ask, you know, find this information in a public library.
Right.
So given tasks that involves you would have to go outside of the media in order to get your mm-hmm. answer. On the government aspect, in terms of nutrition, our government actually does have like a school lunch program.
Mm-hmm.
And there were guidelines set for the types of foods that are supposed to be served in school.
Right.
But of course, we have the vendors that are outside of the school that are very near to the schools, and we have difficulty controlling that.
Mm-hmm.
They're offering sodas. In some instances, people say a soda is less than the price of a bottle of water, but, you know, that's debatable. They're going to say that the healthier foods don't sell as well mm-hmm. as the fast foods or the mm-hmm. fried foods and the fatty foods. So getting mandatory changes in the schools in terms of what is offered.
Yeah.
The perimeter vendors
mm-hmm.
trying to, I mean, that's policy changes
right.
that would have to be made to try to minimize what they are, the types of food that they can offer.
Yeah, especially if it's a mobile vendor. So that's the thing, you know, it's something that I noticed recently in driving around, just how many of, and is it, for lack of a better framing of it, like it's almost like a pop-up shop. Just
correct.
How many of them are you see them setting up, you know, either in the morning and then again in the afternoon, mm-hmm. right around school, like
yeah.
the time that school comes out. And that is interesting because I guess that would be policy
mm-hmm.
to not have certain types of things being able to be sold within a certain radius around the school, things
correct.
Like that. Because I remember there's a particular school, I won't call it by name, but we were driving through the area right after school came out and there was a line of maybe 20 kids at this place across the street, and it's like they said it's salty
mm-hmm,
and,
mm-hmm.
and chips and patties and things like that. And it's like, no, like how many students either don't eat lunch or they're doing this on top of having had lunch at school.
Yeah.
And then you're adding all of this in. So that's true. I never thought about it from a policy standpoint, but that would be something that would potentially be a policy issue and something that can be addressed through that type of means.
Yeah. And then we've been trying to get the government to eliminate sugar sweetened beverages in schools,
right.
especially preschools and primary schools. Push in water.
Mm-hmm.
You know, sometimes in some instances when kids are active for over an hour outside, they actually do need an electrolyte drink.
Mm-hmm.
So having something like a Gatorade after an activity like that is not prohibited
mm-hmm.
in the older children. But trying to eliminate sugar sweetened beverages being offered in the lower schools and even at lunchtime
right.
Is it's been a struggle, but there are schools that have taken on the task of having like a Water Wednesday,
mm-hmm.
where you're only allowed to bring water. There are some preschools where they are encouraging the parents to bring at least one fruit snack, and right. no chips are allowed.
Yes.
So trying to make that a national rule as opposed to just specific schools, mm-hmm. Those changes make a big difference.
Yeah.
Because if everybody in the class is drinking water, it makes it a little bit more palatable to the child that doesn't like water.
Yeah, I know it seems to be more of, because even with a lot of the schools, it comes across as more of a recommendation and not necessarily right. like a hard and fast rule.
Correct.
So I know everywhere that my daughter's been, there's been a definitive, you know, don't send chips, don't send cookies,
right.
Try to send a fruit snack. But it's not necessarily something where they're going to deny the child from eating if they do bring it on campus, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So there is that kind of, it's more of a recommendation than a hard and fast, you know, rule.
Right.
So as we wrap up our conversation, you know, I like to kind of give you an opportunity to get some just quick hitting answers in. You know, if a parent is listening today and they realize that their child may be at risk, what is the very first step they should take?
So, talking to the child about the media in that instance, mm-hmm. or nutrition,
mm-hmm.
I try to tell parents not to target their child and make sure that they are to make it seem like they're the only one. So this is a family change that we need to make, and we're going to make an adjustment in our media usage as well as in our nutrition so that we're all doing it together to make us all healthier. So I would say talking to the child, regardless of the age, is one of the first things that you should do.
Mm-hmm.
And then coming up with a plan, come up with a nutrition plan and come up with a media plan. And again, allow the child to participate in the plan
mm-hmm.
so that they feel like they're a part of it. Mm-hmm. Mommy's interested in me or daddy's interested in me. And this is something we're doing together
yeah.
to make our family healthier.
Okay. What would be your overall message to families who are trying to raise healthy, balanced children in this digital age?
So I would say 5-2-1-0. So 5 fruits and vegetables each day, servings. Mm-hmm. So of course, the serving sizes vary depending on the age of the child.
Right.
2 hours of screen time max. 1 hour of activity, and that can be organized or that can just be outdoor, run up and down play. And as close to 0 sugar sweetened beverages as possible every day.
Okay, I like that one. And then finally, you know, how can people get in touch with you or learn more about, you know, the services that you offer? If they have questions or concerns about their child or their children, either from a standpoint of nutrition and obesity or from screen time, how do they get in contact with you?
So I am at either of the two places every day of the week. So mm-hmm. either Healthy Kids Pediatrics of mm-hmm. Hero Beach or Oakley Medical Center on Prince Charles.
Mm-hmm.
And both of those numbers are listed.
Okay.
And everything else will be in the screen notes.
Awesome. So thank you so much for your time today, Dr. Johnson. I think this is going to be very helpful for our listeners, especially those, you know, with families who are trying to figure out how to navigate this digital age where everything seems to be faster, easier, but not necessarily healthier. So I think this is going to be good information for our audience. So thank you for taking time out of your busy schedule to join us today.
Thank you for having me.
Awesome. So that was Dr. Valencia Johnson helping us to unpack the complex relationship between screen time and childhood obesity. As she reminded us, awareness is the first step, but action is what makes the difference. From setting healthy boundaries with screens to building more active and intentional family routines. If you found this episode helpful, don't forget to subscribe, share it with a friend, and leave us a review. You never know who might need to hear this message today. To learn more about Dr. Johnson or access resources from today's episode, visit our show notes or follow us at Vital Voices Podcast. Until next time, I'm Alexis Burrows. Thanks for listening, and remember, when we elevate voices, we elevate lives. Did you miss a part of today's show? You can catch this episode and all Vital Voices episodes online at youtube.com/@VitalVoices242. See you next week as we sit down with another Vital Voice.
We'd like to give a special thank you to today's sponsor, Oaktree Medical Center.